In memory of Thomas Stephen. Thomas Stephen's parents, Mariana and Matthew, are listeners and patrons of Time to Talk TFMR.
This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley and today we're joined by Janae, who has had three TFMRs due to something called hyperemesis gravidarum. HG is severe sickness in pregnancy, and sometimes it can become so debilitating or even deadly to the mother that ending the pregnancy becomes necessary. So most of us here in the UK, if not the world, would have heard about this term first with Kate Middleton, the Duchess of Cambridge. She was diagnosed with HG in all of her pregnancies. She was hospitalized and she fortunately was able to carry her pregnancies to term and have three healthy babies. And I think most of us, if we've even heard of HG, this is maybe how we will view it, that it's something treatable and you get through it and you get through to healthy babies. But that's not always the case. And so we're really pleased to have Janae here with us to tell us more about her experience. So welcome, Janae.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So I wondered if maybe you could tell us all a bit about what HG is.
Well, my experience with HG, I had light, sound, motion, smell, touch sensitivities. Mm. I had excessive body weight loss, excessive vomiting, 24/7 nausea. Mm. And this is what led to my terminations.
Yeah. It sounds all-encompassing. Consuming, really.
It is. It definitely is. It's a full mind and body experience. Not only was I experiencing the physical aspects, I was also experiencing psychological. I was dealing with depression. During one of my pregnancies, I went into psychosis because of the starvation, and everything kind of spirals out of control when you do not receive adequate medical care.
Yeah. And Janae, you're based in the States. I didn't mention that in the introduction. I mean, you talk about it there about receiving adequate medical care. I mean, here in the UK, we have a National Health Service. I'd like to think that women would receive adequate care, but of course in the States, it's going to be linked a lot with your insurance, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think it is. But it's also based off of, you know, your medical facility, what kind of treatments are available at that medical facility, what kind of treatments your doctor is willing to do. And, you know, your doctor may not think one treatment is better than the other, or they may say, you know, this is just too dangerous for pregnancy, so we're just not going to go that route.
Mm. So it sounds like there's maybe some debate around the treatment options, what's good, what's not good. I mean, is there even a kind of a thinking around, is this severe enough? I mean, is there, people who haven't been through it may just think, well, severe sickness. I mean, you listed a whole host of symptoms and problems that can occur from it. Is there a danger of people just going, it's just that we're just severe sickness?
Yes, there is a big, big danger because hyperemesis gravidarum or HG is life-threatening and it can become life-threatening if treatment isn't started soon. It definitely is not morning sickness. There is a clear line between even severe morning sickness can sometimes look like hyperemesis, but it comes down to the percentage of body weight that you've lost. And the treatments for this, there's not like one set treatment because everybody responds to treatment differently. So it's kind of like they have some ideas and they have general, kind of like general ideas, but there's no one set treatment. And I think that makes it the most dangerous, is because there's just not that one set way to go.
Yeah. So how did it start for you? When did you first realize that HG was what you were dealing with?
Well, I ended up getting pregnant with my first child. And I was waking up every day. I was throwing up. I was throwing up at work. And a family member, actually, who had been pregnant before, was just like, that's not normal. Like, what you're going through is not normal. Something's wrong. Go see your doctor. And I went to a high-risk clinic. And there my doctor said, oh, you have hyperemesis gravidarum. And that's all she left it at. She didn't tell me anything more. She just gave me a diagnosis.
And that was it. And so what happened with that pregnancy? How did that carry through?
It was, she prescribed me Zofran. Okay. And which is an anti-nausea medication. Okay. And that helped. It was great. I took it multiple times a day, and I took it throughout the entire pregnancy because my HG lasted the entire pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And my son was born, and he was born.
Yeah. Okay. And so, yeah, it sounds like, okay, you've been to the doctor, they've given you a diagnosis, they've given you medication, that medication helped you in this instance. And did you give any more thought to HG after that?
No, I did not. Not until I decided to have my second child.
Mm.
And that's when HG just kind of spiraled out of control. Like, it was way more severe than my first pregnancy. I was bedridden. I was throwing up every day. I seemed to keep a good enough amount of weight on me to actually look pregnant. And I just did not know that HG could increase as your number of pregnancies increase.
Yeah, that's that. I didn't know that either until I'd met you, Janae, that that is a possibility, that it can get worse with more pregnancies. And so that's what you experienced. And with that second pregnancy, again, sounds really debilitating. Were you able to carry on working, and or did you end up having to take time off?
I was not working.
Okay.
And I could barely take care of my son, my first child at the time. It was horrible. My house was horrible. It was a mess. I was always in a dark room with my toddler. I couldn't play with him. I could barely take care of him. I could barely take care of myself.
Mm. And when you say dark room, was this because the light sensitivities were coming into play here with this time around?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
There was no light. Like, I had blacked out curtains. I could barely stand to even open the bedroom door because the smell would just wave in, like any kind of smell, even if it was just a normal house smell, it would just knock me off my feet.
It's really interesting because it sounds, you know, there's similar things to migraines here, that people who get migraines have that real sensitivity to sight, smell, sound. These things can trigger off a migraine attack. And so it sounds like there's an assault going on. It sounds awful. So what happened at that stage? Did you make it through that pregnancy? I know you've been pregnant several times, but did you make it through that pregnancy and your baby was born?
Yes.
Okay.
He was born at 40 weeks.
Okay.
And I had hyperemesis through the entire pregnancy, and I was on multiple anti-nausea medications, and that seemed to help get me through. I still had really bad bouts of vomiting, and nausea was constant. Mm-hmm. But I was able to make it through that pregnancy and my baby be born alive.
did you get any other support at this time? I mean, yeah, how did you make it through is kind of what I'm thinking is, how did you make it through that? What was else was in place? Anything?
My partner.
Yeah.
My partner was involved, but he could only handle so much. Mm-hmm. I was going to the emergency room maybe 2 to 3 times a week for IV fluids, because I wasn't able to keep any liquids down. So I had to go in there because, it was an emergency. Mm-hmm. I would go in there and I would tell them, I am this many weeks pregnant. I have hyperemesis gravidarum and I have not eaten or drank food. I haven't been able to keep those down in X amount of days.
Right.
So I kind of like clearly walk them through what was going on, and all they would do is just give me IV fluids, a dose of Zofran, and send me home.
I find that really remarkable that it wasn't your doctor saying you need to come in for fluids. I mean, this was you going, I'm not okay and I need to get some help here. So is that how this has had to go for you? You've had to really fight for your care and be really advocate of your own needs.
Yes. And that is very, very common from what I've been reading, is that they're trying to teach hyperemesis sufferers and their supporters to advocate with the medical teams. And, you know, sometimes that gets really hard because you're so unwell that you can't even speak. So it's like, it's really hard to get that communication with your doctor.
Yeah. 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 I'm kind of blown away by the, by just the sheer will of you to sort of do what you need to do to survive these pregnancies. And, you know, these are two babies that are here and living. What, you get pregnant again, and what is that? I want to ask about the sort of pregnancy after, knowing that this is going to likely happen again. I mean, or maybe you didn't. Maybe you thought, okay, maybe this one will be okay.
My third pregnancy, I thought, okay, well, you know, my second pregnancy is as bad as it's going to be. Like, I thought that was horrible and terrible. But I did not know that it could still increase. And that is what took me off my feet.
Yeah. And I guess that's just it, is you, I think we always kind of think, well, that's got to be the worst situation. That's got to be the worst. It can't get any worse than that. And I guess in some cases, yes, it can. And so was this the first one that resulted in you deciding to end the pregnancy with a termination?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the first one.
Mm. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what made that decision come about for you?
Yeah. Well, I was with a new partner. Mm. And so we decided, hey, we're going to have our first child together. So it was really good. And I was expecting hyperemesis, but I just didn't know it was going to be that severe. And when it did come around, it was like, it's really hard to explain. Everything shut down. Mm. Like my body just started to shut down, and except for vomiting, it was really good. I was really good at throwing up. But other than that, like everything just started to shut down.
Yeah. And when you say shut down, you mean organ shut down?
That is a complication for some sufferers. And I don't know if that would have been my future.
Yeah.
But for me, my organs, you know, they weren't impacted beyond that illness.
I mean, that's, I think, really worth saying, is that this is how serious it is that it can begin to impact. And that's lifelong complication. You know, if it impacts heart muscle or other organs, these are things that may not recover after, you know, an illness like HG. So when you say shut down, what I think you mean is that sort of functioning, being able to get out of bed, look after your two children, work, anything. It sounds like, you know, even just being able to lift. I remember reading something that you wrote about even just being able to like turn a light on or off on your bedside table or pick something up, and it just was just too much. It just impossible.
Right. It was at one point, or at many points throughout my third pregnancy, my boyfriend had to pick me up and put me into the bathtub because I couldn't walk anymore. And I would just lay there on the bathtub floor, and he would have to dress me, and he would have to do these things and care for me because I was completely unable to care for myself.
Yeah, I have this real sense of being trapped in your body in a way.
Exactly.
Just trapped. Yeah. And what sort of help were you getting around that medically? You know, what were the doctors, how were they with all of this? I mean, at any point did they say, you know, Janae, really, we think you need to end this pregnancy? Was that ever a conversation from your medical providers?
No. I still received, just like the care I received in my second pregnancy. Yeah. It was just going to the emergency room and getting IV fluids, anti-nausea medication, and then they would just send me home. And then I would be back a few days later, and the same thing would happen over and over and over again. And, you know, I reached a point to where I was like, how much can my body physically handle?
Yeah.
I weigh 85 pounds. How much more can I take with just IV fluids? Yeah. You know, I can't just survive off of that in a pregnancy or really any time. No. But yeah.
I mean, were you scared?
I was very scared.
Yeah.
I was really scared for my baby because I was thinking, if I'm not getting what I need, how are they getting what they need?
Yeah.
And it turned out that for some miracle reason that is kind of like a, you know, almost like a cosmic joke, my baby was healthy. Mm. And I was the one, excuse me, I was the one who was sick.
Yeah. So when did you know with this pregnancy that you really were in big trouble here with this, that this was different, even worse than what you'd already dealt with?
I think I noticed after the first week, when I found out I was pregnant, throughout that first week, things started to kind of go downhill. And I was like, okay, I got this. I know my nausea. I know I'll need this and this. And by the second week, it was like how you said, you know, like the migraine. Mm. And it's debilitating, and it set in full force, and I couldn't be touched. I couldn't stand the smell of anything. Like everything started, you know, shutting down. Eventually I wasn't even able to talk.
I can see how hard this is for you, Janae. I mean, that's why I asked you if you were frightened, because it sounds terrifying.
It is, because you don't know really what's going on. And it's just like you are on this unwilling roller coaster ride and you want to get off, but you can't. Because if you get off, that means you leave your baby behind.
Yeah, it's an awful, awful position to be in. I mean, at this point, did you have an obstetrician that was a part of your team? Did you have any extra support from them?
I did not have any other support from them. By this pregnancy, I had contacted them, and their best advice was go to the emergency room And my emergency doctor would always say, go back to your doctor. And so they were kind of like, go back to this person, go back to that person. And nothing was helping. Nothing was getting done.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me feel quite angry for you that this is a situation you found yourself in. And it feels like nobody was really looking after you. That's what it feels like. I mean, this is a very vulnerable place for you to be in, to be this ill. Like you say, you know, losing the point where you can't even really speak. It's a pretty horrendous state of affairs.
Yeah, it left me questioning a lot about medical care and just facing that we are all human. Mm-hmm. And, you know, medical care can't be perfect, but it can be better.
Yeah, it can be human. I mean, it's like, it just feels right. Like you're treated quite inhumanely. So at what point did you have to make this heartbreaking decision? You know, that you are going to have to let this baby go.
It had never been a thought in my mind until I was at home and I was feeling very faint. And I was like, okay, I know what to do. I'm going to call the ambulance and they're going to get here. And while I was on the phone with them, I think I started to black out. I think I did mm-hmm. black out. But I had got the house door unlocked first. And I, next thing you know, I woke up on a stretcher and they're putting me into the back of the ambulance. And I think around that time, I started to realize that I'm probably going to have to end this pregnancy.
How did that feel?
Kind of surreal, like somebody else was saying it and not me.
So they took you into hospital and did you leave that hospital still pregnant or did you make the decision while you were there receiving treatment?
I received treatment and then I went back home and I had to call Planned Parenthood.
Okay.
And I had to make all of these medical decisions and all of these calls myself.
Yeah, again, just extremely inhumane. I mean, and your treatment with Planned Parenthood, I mean, how did that feel? Did you feel, yeah, how did that feel? How was that?
On my way to Planned Parenthood, just sitting around the corner from the building were protesters, but not, you know, it was cold outside. So everyone was like wrapped up, thank goodness. And all, you know, they were just holding their sign saying, look at the ultrasound and blah, blah, blah. And when I went into Planned Parenthood, on the side of the door was some graffiti that had been painted over. So I it was not a very welcoming environment to walk into. When I went to talk to the receptionist, there was glass. I mean, I'm assuming bulletproof glass, but there was a barrier between us. And I felt like that barrier was kind of how that treatment was the entire time. They kind of called us back there. Like they treated us almost like cattle. Mm-hmm. You know, just one procedure, next procedure, next procedure. And, there was no comfort. My partner was not allowed back. And I mean, nobody really checked in on us because I wasn't the only one there. No one checked in on us. We were just left to sit there and wait.
Yeah, unfortunately, there can be very good care in clinics for TFMR parents. But unfortunately, there can be lacking in certain aspects for TFMR parents in clinics. I think it's important that the clinics are there and people are able to access it because they need it. But I think this is what you're sort of highlighting, Janae, is that TFMR parents need something a bit different than most others who might be accessing abortion care in a clinic. I think namely the recognition that this is a wanted pregnancy and the decisions being made to end the pregnancy, and that that is devastating for parents. You know, just being able to have some of that recognition helps to just know that you're being recognized like that as a parent, I think.
It is.
So I'm sorry you didn't get it.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about actually was about anti-choice groups, anti-abortion groups, alongside the complication of maternal health reasons. You know, we're talking about HG with you. It could be a woman who receives a cancer diagnosis in the middle of her pregnancy. And I wondered how you feel about, you know, what's going on at the moment in the States, you know, in Texas and whatnot, and that mother's health is not being considered.
Well, first, I think it's disgusting to try to claim rights or tell someone what they can and can't do with their body. That's just wrong. But for me personally, I've had some, I had someone who was anti-choice tell me that I should have continued the pregnancies. Even though my life was in danger, they told me I should have continued the pregnancies. And I think that says a lot about anti-choice.
Yeah. Because you have two living children as well who need you.
Right.
I think that's important to say. You have two living children that need you. And I've seen you write about it, you know, that your pain at not being able to care for them while you've been so ill is real. This is extremely complicated. So for anybody to come in and sort of declare that there's one way of doing it, you know, this is it. You just carry on with the pregnancy. Was that somebody close to you?
Yes. I wouldn't say he was close to me. I guess I'll just say it. It was my father. My dad told me that. And so I think that was one of the most ignorant things I've ever heard him say. He called me and my partner irresponsible people who murdered their children. And I also think that plays a lot into the pro-life, anti-choice movement, that if they were in our shoes, what would they do? What would they say? Some of the things that are being said out there truly are not pro-life things, because to be pro-life means to be for life, and life means people making choices for their life. Mm-hmm. It is not telling them what they should do. It's supporting them and what they would like to do. You know, I didn't like having to terminate, but that was my choice. You know, I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. You know, your life, you are here. You are here. Your life matters. Your life counts. And those of your living children, their lives count. Their lives matter. Your partner. And, you know, I've kind of often thought, well, I'm, you know, because the opposite of pro-life is anti-life. I'm not anti-life, you know. So these are the terms that get thrown by both sides, you know, can get thrown back and forth. And they're meant to be pro, that term pro-life is meant to be to bring up things in people. That's the point of it. But I think what you're trying to say is that, you know, being able to support people in making decisions that are right for them, because it's their life. It's their life that is on the line here.
Yeah. And I think in my situation, I did choose life. Mm. I could have died with my babies, or I could have lived, and I chose life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable that your own father would say that. I mean, you know, you are his daughter who is suffering one of the most, what you've described, the most horrendous amount of suffering. You know, and I think as a parent, you just do not want to see your child suffering. I mean, it must have been so incredibly painful to have him say that.
Yeah, it definitely was at the time, but I think as, and that was just a few years ago, maybe like 2 years ago, but that when he told me that, I realized that I'm probably not the only one who's being told this. And that kind of fuels my energy now that I can take that. I used to be so angry, but now it's turned into power that I'm here to hopefully empower others that you don't have to take that. That is not right. That you are not what others tell you that you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us a bit about how you were using that power then, Janae. I want to hear it.
So I think in 2019, I started a online Facebook support group for those who have gone through hyperemesis gravidarum and have faced a loss, whether it be termination, stillbirth, miscarriage. You know, I wanted to have an all-inclusive community. And I've just been writing my story and putting it out there as much as possible.
Yeah. And I've seen your writings, and you know, you've shared through our platform as well. And, you know, being able to connect to others who've been through TFMR has been really empowering for me. But I imagine, again, you know, extrapolate that into different types of diagnosis. And we know that maternal health reasons for ending a pregnancy are rarer, thankfully. So being able to find someone else who has done that for that reason must be just so, yeah, empowering or cathartic to meet other people and to share.
It is. I remember telling my partner at the beginning of all of this, I was just like, I want to look someone else in the eye who has gone through this, and just, I don't want to say anything to them. I just want to look at them.
Yeah. So,
because I know that they will know.
Yeah. I mean, you have really been to hell and back. I mean, you are such a survivor. It's incredible, really. So these support groups that you have, you know, this Facebook support group, have you got any other sort of plans or anything else that you're sort of putting together to help those out there?
Currently, I have an Instagram page, and I have a website that shares stories, other HG loss stories. And I have a few things kind of in the background as little secrets right now, but there are some other things coming that hopefully will help others know that, hey, you're not alone. And, you know, this will show it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm working on a few things.
Okay. And we'll put all your sort of contacts and where people can reach you and the different sort of avenues that you have for support. We'll put that all into the podcast notes, because I think it's really important. And, you know, I think also what might be quite good is to put some contact or some information around HG also for healthcare professionals, because it sounds like I mean, I know your experience is your experience, but it feels like you cannot be the only one who has gone through such appalling lack of humane care. So I think maybe some information around that, around where people can get more information about what HG is. I wonder where you're at in your pregnancy journey, if we may ask. Yeah, where are you at with that? Because, you know, we know that this has been your story throughout all your pregnancies.
I've had 5 HG pregnancies. So all of my pregnancies have, I've had this illness. And after the 3 terminations, my partner said he just couldn't do it again. And so that took me about a year to kind of wrap my mind around that. And I had both my fallopian tubes removed.
Oh, Janae.
And that really sucks because that is not where I wanted to bring our baby home.
Yeah.
I still do.
Yeah. It's a big thing to decide to no longer try for children. It's incredibly painful and full of grief. It's another loss.
Yeah, I felt like I was, in a way, losing my babies all over again. The wave of pain just kind of, and throughout the years, it's caused a lot of depression. And I'm still dealing with PTSD from those past years and the things that I've gone through.
Mm. Yeah, it's a lot. You've been through a hell of a lot. And I think what's important to hear is that, you know, this doesn't just go away. I mean, we know it as TFMR parents. For anyone listening who's that health professional who works with TFMR parents, yeah, this doesn't just go away, you know. It's a lifetime of working through it. You've been really, really brave and open with us, Janae, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you sort of one last question, and we ask this of all of our guests. You can tailor it to HG if you would like to, but the question is, what advice or piece of hope would you give to women and families who are either facing TFMR or who have undergone TFMR?
I mean, for all of it, for anyone facing TFMR, even those, you know, with HG, you are not alone. You're not alone. I know there are, in the HG community, termination kind of seems to be the bad thing, but you're not alone in choosing that.
Yeah. There are others out there like yourself. And I think you're a living testament to that survival and, you know, the power in what you are creating for others. So thank you very much for being with us, Janae. It's been really lovely having you here.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening, and we hope you've enjoyed it. Let us know over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR and Twitter at Talk TFMR. Don't forget you can subscribe to our podcast from Podbean or Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. Subscribing means you get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released. So that's all for this time. Thank you so much, and please take gentle care of yourselves. Bye.